This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast features Pip Hansen of Keeper's Heart Whiskey. This Minneapolis-based Irish-American distillery is producing spirits unlike you've ever tried. Be sure to reach out to Pip and Keeper's Heart Whiskey and let them know what you thought about the podcast. Cheers! Ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you've chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. Hey, Pip Hansen. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Pip, welcome to the podcast.
Very nice to be here. Thank you.
Pip, I'm excited. We are going to talk a lot about whiskey. We're going to talk some cocktails. Right now, we're going to focus on talking about Keeper's Heart, which is the reason why we're brought together today. How did Keeper's Heart Whiskey get started?
Keeper's Heart Whiskey got started when, basically during an Irish-American family reunion here in Minneapolis. It was a family that the O'Shaughnessy family came to America during the potato famine. They spread throughout the country and were always sort of connected by, running different businesses, family businesses together. And, the idea was, let's bring that back. Let's start an O'Shaughnessy family business like we used to have, 100 years ago, 50 years ago. Let's kind of get back into something as a family together. And the obvious, I think, choice when you're drinking whiskey at a family reunion is you want to start a whiskey distillery. And also the obvious choice, if you're an Irish American family, is you maybe want to reference your Irish heritage in that. You might also look at the fact that Irish is the fastest growing whiskey category currently and maybe think that that's an opportunity as well. And so there's, I think, a lot of reasons why the O'Shaughnessy family thought that it made sense to start a distillery. And this was maybe like 5 years ago that these wheels started turning.
Now, as a family getting together, what were the next steps to, it's great to drink some whiskey. It's great to come up with this idea of starting a distillery, but what were the next steps to get this to where we're drinking this wonderful whiskey today?
Well, the first steps are, you plan, and the planning stages, my understanding before I came on, the planning stages started small, where it was, maybe source and start a label, a whiskey label basically. And then, you probably want to get some land and maybe have a distillery in your plans. And then the distillery, kind of snowballed into, we got to have some Irish pot stills. And it really, as these plans progressed, they became more and more ambitious until we ended up with a 30,000 square foot distillery in the heart of the city. And we happened to poach Bryan Nation from Irish Distillers, which was huge for us.
What's exciting for me and Dawn and our Fermented Adventure is we met you at Tales of the Cocktail this past year. And one of the exciting things about Tales or our experience is finding and discovering and these amazing brands that we had not heard of or have not been exposed to. And I think part of it is for, where we are in Pennsylvania, it may be more difficult to get some of these brands on our shelves or behind the bar because of the Liquor Control Board. But just the first time tasting, and we'll start out with the whiskey, the Irish American whiskey. It was like, wow, where have you guys been? And how come we don't know about this? Or what's that, for you? I mean, it's getting the brand out. It's getting the awareness out. But do you get that quite often? Like, where did this come from? In Minneapolis, what?
Minneapolis does not It has not been known for distilling historically, but we are slowly building the scene. The laws changed a lot in Minnesota in the past, decade or so that made it possible. But I think we might be a similar situation to, Philadelphia, where, we don't always see the hot, the new up and coming brands right away. And so Tails is really good for, not just like existing brand education, but also like turning up some of the new exciting things that are happening in the world. Minneapolis, it's why not Minneapolis? I've always loved how some of the best restaurants in Europe are not found in the major cities, but they're kind of, you have to drive a little out of the way. You have to go to where the water's clear and the fields are green, get away from the city a little bit. And so I've always been interested in trying to recreate that sort of, just culinary excellence in a smaller market. And so it was really the right move for me, especially.
You mentioned, the thought of starting a distillery and sourcing and obviously getting the juice from somewhere. Is there a connection there or something you can talk about as to where things were sourced in the beginning? And where are you in terms of, all right, this is ours. This is something we'll still source. This is what we're blending. Because, all those things together are, a tribute to how well you're putting together this distillery and the success as what you're growing and building off of.
Absolutely. So I guess the first thing I should mention, and I kind of referenced this earlier, when we opened, when we were planning the distillery before we opened, we poached Brian Nation, who was the former master distiller of Irish Distillers. And that meant he was responsible for 20 some years for the, the consistency and the quality of Middleton and Redbreast. And then the Spotline, of course, and then also Jameson and Powers. And so, I am still kind of astonished that we managed to convince him, not we, the O'Shaughnessys managed to convince him to come to the US and launch this brand. But, that is the biggest thing that happened for us, is getting that kind of distilling knowledge in our camp. So the roadmap has been, and this is very similar to every distillery's roadmap if they're making whiskey, you have to do something for the first 3 to 4 years. And so rather than focus on gin or vodka, which wasn't really an Irish American story to us, it made more sense to try to kind of, the foundation of the brand is Irish and American, that the space in between the two. And so it made sense to try to create something that reflected that. And so everyone sources initially, usually. And so we decided we were going to source our favorite distilleries in Ireland. We're going to source from our favorite distilleries in the US, and we're going to put the two together. And that product is really nothing that had ever existed, at least since Prohibition. And so it was much more interesting to me, I guess, than, the launches where it's you buy somebody else's bourbon and put your own label on it for 4 years and then hopefully have whiskey ready. This was something, this is a really bold product to open with. There's really no precedent for it in anybody's living memory. And so that in itself is really kind of bold. And I really like that. These blends that we're sourcing, these blends of Irish and American whiskeys that we're currently creating, these will be forever, is my understanding. These, we may have at one point or another intended to funnel our own distillate into these products when they're ready. But the response has been so good. The quality of these products is so high that I think we're just going to leave these exactly as they are. They're going to continue growing and evolving in the blending space. And then, we've been open for about 2 years. So in about 2 years, our own distillate will be ready, and that'll just be another arrow in the quiver.
You talk about these established Irish distilleries, these established American distilleries that you found this and sourced with. Where does it come to the mindset of, because you're creating, or you are part of, or you are, that level that you're bringing to the consumer, to me, is this new Irish wave, this new consumer brand that's unlike anything that's coming, or, it's typically, what would we say? This is not grandpa's whiskey, right? This is not granddad's Irish whiskey. How does the mindset come in, or the philosophy, to start blending to where this is more that new world order that this just, I think it's taking the consumer, it's taking the whiskey consumer by storm. And if they don't see it, they're going to see it real soon as to mm-hmm. what's coming out of Ireland and what you're creating here, you know, in the United States in Minneapolis.
Well, I think there was really, you know, if you're going to start an Irish American distillery with that as the theme, and you know, you're starting from scratch and you're going to have to source, in a way, the obvious decision would have been to do this. This is, you know, it kind of makes just a fundamental sense. It doesn't hurt that Brian Nation was not just the master distiller, but he was also the master blender for these whiskeys in Ireland. And so, you know, usually those are split up. It's two different roles, but Brian has experience not just distilling, but blending and maintaining the consistency of a product like Greenspot. And he will tell you often that blending is in some ways just as hard or harder than distillation. We also had David Perkins join us from an early stage, and he and Brian, they just have a very good creative chemistry, I think. And so after, you know, some 140 different variations on the blend, they finally settled on what Keeper's Heart was. But really, you know, you're approaching it from Brian's sort of deep Irish roots, and then David Perkins from High West's experience, you know, creating kind of a new superstar blended brand. I think both of those approaches really informed the success of this product.
Pip, as you come on the scene with Keeper's Heart, talk about your experience and the responsibilities that you have at the distillery.
Totally. So my current role is beverage director and head of mixology. And what those titles refer to is, you know, beverage director is basically makes me responsible for the bars, the cocktail program, and the kind of bar training of the distillery. The distillery staff and the distillery bar program. We have 350 seats. It's a 30,000 square foot facility, and about half of that is guest hospitality space. So we have three different bars. We have a full kitchen. There's not a lot like it, but it's also just means like we have a lot of volume. And so that was my first role, was to basically plan that out and figure out how we were going to serve cocktails to, you know, sometimes 250 people out of one bar when we don't have beer and wine to kind of relieve the pressure of that volume. So that was a pretty good initial challenge. As the bar stabilized, my role of head of mixology matured. And, you know, once the bar was running and I didn't have to bartend every night, then I started going on the road to do, you know, brand ambassador work, start to tell other bartenders about the product and what we're doing, and specifically other bartenders. You know, my work in bars kind of makes me a good ambassador to just go into bars and restaurants and kind of do a little sales, but, you know, a soft sell, because I'm not always comfortable being a salesman. You know what I mean?
Okay. I like how you kind of gloss over my work in bars, because once you start to understand and learn your resume and your experience, 25 plus years in the industry, you've been recognized internationally, nationally, by some significant publications as, you know, dare I say, a rock star behind the bar. And you are very humble and you are very subtle, but what you bring to Keeper's Heart with your experience, knowledge, creativity, I mean, you talk about the access to some of these great minds that are creating and blending this juice, but the access that the O'Shaughnessys have to what you now create behind the bar is I'm almost like, now I wish we were recording this at the distillery so we could try some of these cocktails that Keeper's Heart is being utilized in.
Well, we should do a second one. You should come here.
Don't threaten us.
You know, I would say, I mean, I have some interesting experience in a fairly unique CV. But I think that really meant that it was the right fit for this project. You know, this whole building is just full of people with very deep experience in their spheres. We've got a lot of distillers from Old Elk supporting Brian's vision, and, you know, Kate and Chris, they do just fantastic work. So there's really the bench is very deep all around. And so all I can say is I feel very lucky that I was able to find, you know, a team of like-minded people.
Talk about, again, your experience and what you bring to Keeper's Heart with mm-hmm. that mixology program, and what your personality that you impart or the philosophy that you're bringing to highlight these spirits, which we will try shortly, but talk about that philosophy that you're bringing to the distillery and to the restaurant and what people are enjoying day in and day out.
Sure. So I guess a quick bit of background. I've been bartending since about 2005, which puts it, not too far off 20 years. I was pretty quickly into, I was very early on interested in the cocktail side of things. In 2005, I think Pegu Club had just opened. And so we were hearing in Minneapolis these rumors of like this crazy bar that was doing, I don't know why it was Pegu Club that we heard about, but we kept hearing people talking about it. And then the more I read, Def and Co. and PDT. So I was always very interested in that from the earliest days. I, instead of going to New York, as many do, I went to Tokyo, and it just so happened to study with a guy called Ueda Kazuo, who was, in my view, is maybe the best living drink maker in the world. And he taught me a lot of the things that go into the Japanese way of cocktail making. And I also worked in a bar there for a year. And so kind of absorbed that and tried to bring it back to the U.S., did bring it back to the U.S. in sort of an evolved form in a bar called Marvel Bar, which I created the program for and ran for about 5 years from 2011 to 2015. I left that to kind of try to go be a student for somebody else. I wanted to kind of seek out another mentor and maybe just grow my own skills a little bit. Just feeling like when you're the boss, you aren't necessarily being like corrected as much. And so I ended up in London, as the head bartender of Artesian, which was known as the best bar in the world for 4 years in a row, kind of by accident. And while I was in London, I had kind of in the same way that I was in Japan, kind of learning the methodical Japanese shokunin like drink making approach. In London, I started to get these ideas for how we could kind of crack the code, break the rules of cocktails, which is that your drink is going to take 15 minutes. I started to come up with a plan for how we could rewrite that rule book. And took me, when I got back to the US, it took me about it was 5 years between bartending shifts. So almost 5 years, but I finally found a project that was willing to put it in place, that had the ambition to try this design and this workflow that I had envisioned. And that was the distillery here, and it worked.
All that experience. Talk about the creation or just some of the cocktails that people were enjoying there at Keeper's Heart at the bar.
Absolutely. So we are not able to buy things like Campari, Amaro, vermouths. And so everything we're doing in the bar, the whole cocktail program has to be basically cooked. So we're working with as much local produce as we can and trying to find interesting choices that haven't necessarily been really explored yet. So my goal in the long term is to get away from any kind of imported citrus. In the short term, ingredients. One of my favorite ingredients for the opening list was radicchio, which we weren't able to buy Campari. And I just kind of thought, what if we juice fresh radicchio? What's that going to taste like? And it gives you a really interesting herbal bitterness that is just unlike any other ingredient. And you can make really wild sours out of it, really wild like stirred cocktails out of it. It's not too far off an Amaro in flavor profile. So some of those discoveries were really, really rewarding, as well as just, the things we have here, what can you do with those ingredients? How many different ways can you work with apples? How many different ways can you work with honey? It's a fantastic creative challenge, but it's also been, led to a lot of things that I wouldn't have done otherwise.
Well, we met at the emerging brands area at Tales of the Cocktail. And again, stumbling upon your whiskey, I think, we spent a lot of time there. I didn't want to move on because I didn't want to miss anything. What was your experience this year? And what was just the feedback that that you got this year from the whiskey, from the Keeper's Heart whiskey that you were bringing to the masses?
I mean, Tales is always a great time. The reaction has been really encouraging. This is the first year we were in Tales, and the reaction has been very encouraging. The blends are always, they're a charmed product. I don't want to use the word luck of the Irish, but I mean, they're really like, there's something to this product that people just come away really, really enjoying it and really intrigued by it. And I think it's just a confluence of a lot of factors. The biggest thing for me personally is, I guess what you could call my first product, was demoed or debuted at Tales. We bottled our old fashioned recipe and basically adjusted it just enough to work in a bottle as an RTD. And that won best whiskey cocktail in show at Tales of the Cocktail this year. So that was big for me.
See, this is why you mentioned Radicchio, and I don't know if I've ever talked to anybody or spoken to anybody about utilizing Radicchio in a bar program. And, you know, hearing about the accolades, and as people discover again what you're doing, what Keeper's Heart is doing, you're going to have to start, you know, getting more bottles out on the shelves. Where can people find Keeper's Heart right now throughout the United States or internationally?
Yeah, we're in 20, I want to say like, we're somewhere in like 22 different states, and we're also in Ireland, where we're doing well, you know, very, very well, like not surprisingly, but we were kind of expanded on a whim, and the reaction has been great. Probably the easiest way to find it, if you're not sure if we're carried, is go to osdistilling.com or to your local like Reserve Bar Drizzly link, whichever is, you know, we use more, and just search for us. osdistilling.com has a finder that'll direct you to either liquor stores in town or whatever delivery service will bring it. And so it's actually really easy to locate a bottle if you're looking for one.
Speaking to that, we're in Pennsylvania. Nothing's easy in Pennsylvania.
Yep, every state is crazy.
That's why we're happy that New Jersey is close by and Delaware is close by. So we have access to quality, you know, these special bottles that like you're producing.
Has anyone ever said, I'm happy to be next door to New Jersey?
Yeah, I just did.
Okay. No, that might be a first. I love New Jersey. I drove through it a while back. I've never driven in New Jersey. And I really, really was like, oh, this is a great state. So no offense to anyone from New Jersey. No.
We have access to wonderful beach lines. There's a lot of diversity. And yes, New Jersey is a really nice place that you don't have to just drive through. You can stop. And and enjoy.
Beautiful and green. Yeah.
So while we've been speaking for the last couple of minutes, I opened a whiskey, the Irish American, and I've been just enjoying the nose on this. And you know, from the bottle's been open, and from what I've gotten to experience is what resonates with me is this sour, spicy apple, like.
Sure.
It's just so wonderful, but you get the wood tones, the oaky tones on the nose, and I even got a little pear. This is such a wonderful journey of the senses, you know, with Keeper's Heart. You know, we talk about the blending, and you talked about the process of over 140 iterations to get to this one. What was the idea that of the nose and flavor profile and the experience that was looking to be expected and enjoyed? Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast.
So I think to hear Brian talk about it, it was very much exploratory. It was sort of blazing a new trail. He didn't, I think, necessarily go into it with preconceived notions, except for, you know, I would say maybe one notion he had was that, so to back up, the whiskey is a blend of Irish grain whiskey and pot still whiskey and then Indiana rye whiskey. And I think initially when Brian was devising the blend, his idea was that it would just be pot still whiskey and rye whiskey. And he didn't think that the grain whiskey, which is, maybe just slightly softer and less assertive in its flavor, he didn't necessarily think that would be required. It would just be American and Irish, simply. And what he found was that the grain whiskey was actually really important. It was kind of a binder, or, you know, kind of brought the two flavors together and made a bridge between them that wouldn't have existed otherwise. So I think it was really sort of discovering that it wasn't two whiskeys that were going to go together. It was three. That was one of the big breakthroughs for him.
As a Pennsylvania resident who is a fan of rye whiskey, we love our rye whiskey here. That is, to me, that's what makes this such a treat, because you get the subtle notes of what you're speaking to regarding the Irish side of things. You get those grain tones, but that rye and what it does in the experience, my first sip and the second sip, the tones of that grain, almost like it's pop rocks exploding in your mouth as your mouth just gets used to the sensation and the flavor. And It doesn't come off. It's a light sipping whiskey, not a lot of ethanol. But this is such a wonderful whiskey. And that's why I said, what was the idea? What was the thought behind creating this flavor blend that I think is unlike anything in the marketplace right now?
There is no whiskey that tastes like it. And the, you know, initially the goal was to create a product that I think was true to the Irish American sort of heritage of the family and the sort of this jumping off point of the distillery to see how the interactions between the two would come together.
There's this sourness experience that gives way to, again, the spiciness and the creaminess of this whiskey. And, you know, this is one of those things, Pip, we can just open up this bottle. And I'm sure as the O'Shaughnessy family has experienced, just telling stories, right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. dreaming of dreams and desires for the future. And I think this is one of those bottles that represents that. But it's also a cocktail. It's also great for cocktails. It, like you said, you made the old fashioned, and this is the vehicle for the old fashioned. So there's a lot of versatility with this whiskey.
It is an incredibly versatile whiskey. As you know, I don't think I've ever encountered a bottle that does more than this single bottle. Back in the day, before the pre-Keeper's Heart days, you know, it was you make a Manhattan, you're going to grab four different bourbons and ryes just to like kind of blend mash bills together. You know, David Perkins, I think when he made Campfire, you know, bourbon with a, or I forget if it was bourbon or rye with a splash of Islay malt, but a little bit of smoke in it. That was really an eye-opening product for me because I realized like, oh, you can do that. And so Keeper's Heart really eliminated the need to grab more than one bottle off a shelf. You've got three different distillate styles. You've got three different maturation styles all coming together to create this, you know, really subtle chord and this flavor that, you know, nobody had ever really tasted before. Without being overpowering, without being overwhelming. As a bourbon lover, the thing that disappointed me when single malt, you know, snobs, for lack of a better word, would come into a bar that I worked at was that they would dismiss bourbon as just being too sweet, too much honey, vanilla, caramel. And, you know, the American whiskey drinkers, a lot of times they'll tell you that Irish is just too light, right? I don't know that I agree with either of those statements, but I will say that the Keeper's Heart Irish American sidesteps both of those criticisms. You've got a little bit of rye juicing up the, you know, the Irish, but you've got some Irish softening the rye if you know, American maturation styles are just a little too sweet for you. So I think it does not just cocktails well. Obviously the old fashioned that we've submitted has done really well, but if you, you know, if you want it on the rocks, I think it's equal to just about anything. And if your friend wants it in Coca-Cola, it's not gonna cause any tears, you know?
This is why I made reference to, if you're not paying attention to what is happening with Irish whiskey right now and American Irish whiskey, you are missing out on an experience that, you know, so little people are talking about, but you're bringing to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yep, somebody just stuck, let's say, a Hemi engine in like a little Mini Cooper, right? You don't expect that car to be that powerful, that, you know, that joyful of a ride until you get into it. And that's what I think this wave of this new vision for what Irish whiskey is and how America and American Irish whiskey is just creating that, that overwhelming just sensation that hopefully people are keying into more.
Yeah, I think what I'm told, I've never been to Ireland, but what I'm told is that the distilling scene there has just been exploding over the past 10 years. And I think this is giving Americans especially the opportunity to see a contemporary side of Ireland that is maybe not represented in the Irish pubs with the shamrocks on them. You know what I mean? But we're really seeing like the true Ireland come through expressed in its whiskey.
Yeah, this isn't something you're just going to pound down with a beer or, hey, you know, I just need a shot. Let me get through the day. And again, it's just such a wonderful thing. And kudos to everybody involved that has created this. My lingering experience right now is just how those grains just stay on the mouth, just stay on the tongue, the oakiness experience. It's not overly tannin filled. There's not a lot of tannin there. So it really just, you breathe in, breathe out, you get a lot of just soft enjoyment, almost like watching, you know, the wheat sway in the in the winds in the heartlands. Like I think that's a vision that's what I'm experiencing, is just as the glass is almost empty.
Totally. It's got a lot going on. You know, the whiskeys are, there's three whiskeys in here, two Irish, one American. They're pretty much equal parts roughly. And so I think you really just get a really good balance of the three. They're also all 4 years minimum. We don't add any caramel or coloration of any kind, and we don't chill filter. So you're really getting like the full spectrum of whiskey flavor with each of them.
There are citrus notes that are sitting there, a little orange. You do get a little bit of cherry there. Are there, you know, I'm sharing my experience, but are there flavor profiles that you share? And when you're out, you know, allowing people to experience Keeper's Heart, are there things that you tell them about or want them to know about the flavor profile on this?
I am very laissez-faire about tasting notes. I will, you know, I will let everybody have their own reality. The tasting notes I usually give people are, you know, if you taste the components individually, the grain whiskey is a soft, kind of almost floral, dusty vanilla. The pot still is, you know, cooked fruit, apples, as you observe, pears, certainly, and some spices as well in there. And then the rye is good old American rye, right? It's vanilla, it's caramel, it's spice. And then there's definitely some oak there as well. And so, you know, those come together. All of those flavors are here. But what I like best about this product is that, you know, the gestalt, the things that you don't notice in any individual components that are created from the combination. I get really interesting, like slight salinity off of it, as well as some herbal qualities like anise that I don't necessarily detect in the individual components.
See, this is fun. And this is why we talked off in the beginning. You know, this is why I love doing this, to have this experience. We've got two more expressions. Where should we go next?
Well, I would definitely move on to the core, the second core product. And I say core product, the Irish and bourbon is, you know, that is the black label. That's our second flagship product. But I believe you have the cask strength bourbon, right? Is that correct?
We have, the cask strength is correct.
Yep. So I describe that as core plus, maybe. So that is our Irish and American, or our Irish and bourbon whiskey. But it has been released, rather than rectifying down to 92 proof. We brought it, but we haven't added any water at all this time. So you can get this at the 92 proof, but you've got the cask strength in front of you. And I think new flavors come out of this one that are just really, really fascinating, especially when you compare it with the previous whiskey, the Irish and rye. You know, they're much more different than you might expect.
Yeah, this is 118 proof. Yep. Wow. Yeah.
But it doesn't, to me, this does not taste like a high proof whiskey. You know, this tastes like it's in the 90s as it is.
All right. So we talked about the three blends from the Irish American. Share with us the blends that are going into this one.
So again, you have two Irish components of grain whiskey and pot still whiskey. And then instead of the rye whiskey in the previous one, this is with bourbon instead. And the bourbon here is going to be about 60%, you know, roughly 2/3 bourbon in the blend, whereas the rye in the Irish and American is about equal parts. So you're going to get a much more predominantly American, you know, American whiskey profile here. Not overwhelmingly so, but certainly more noticeably. And I think that really differentiates it from the Irish and American. There's a, you know, in addition to, you know, that just obviously like softer, sweeter honey, vanilla, there's a really fascinating finish to me of like charcoal that I really like. It just ends on a, you know, a note that I really find fascinating, is that little like almost like charcoal finish.
Now, I haven't sipped this, but we've had conversations along the way about visualizing the senses as colors. And it's interesting to me, as the Irish American, in my mind, I was seeing a very bright, like almost like a blinding white in my mind. And when I first started to smell this, nose this, everything was darker. Everything, you know, was more towards the black hue of where things, it just like how my mind shifted from that bright white to this dark, almost like as you're walking into a forest. And the deeper you get, the darker it gets because of the canopy. But on the nose, wonderful vanillins, honey, and you mentioned that charcoal that almost like created this smoke in my mind that enveloped that experience in the forest. Again, not everybody has to have these, you know, notes or what they do. You could just drink it, smell it. It doesn't matter. To me, this is what bourbon represents. And to what I enjoy is it's telling a story. And you know, don't miss the beginning and go to the middle, because then you wonder why, you know, how did the principal in the story end up in the bar? Because you missed the beginning and you didn't know how he got there. And to me, that's the nose. And this is, I hadn't had this one yet. So I'm so grateful to have this experience. And even as this opens up, just those citrus notes that comes out, you know, the cherries and what I would want from a bourbon, but there's such a softness here. It's almost like somebody's handing me all these nose, you know, the profiles with gloves. They've got white gloves on. So here, try this and see what you think about it, right?
Sure. Well, you know, people talk about like a flavor arc, you know, the progression, the entry, the mid palate, the finish. And they talk about complexity and the idea that a lot of different tasting notes will, you know, usually create a good flavor, right? If there's a lot going on, you're like, oh, there's so much here. I have this idea that, you know, really, when we talk about complexity, it's all temporal. It's all things happening one after the other. When people talk about busy, tight, or, you know, like tight or busy or compact flavors, I think a lot of times that's all the notes occurring at once. And so a lot of times the trick is to stretch those out over the course so you get something in the entry and something in the finish instead of all at once.
You talk about the entry. It's in my mind, I was expecting maybe something a little bit more viscous, but it comes in thin, and that allows this to kind of sweep over. Nice tingling in the front of the tongue.
Is it thin or is it light?
Oh, that's a good question. Is it thin or light?
I think it's light. I'm not sure I would call this thin. I would call it delicate and soft and light. Thin is a defect to me, but light is, you know, subtlety. It's restraint.
All right. I love learning. And this is that learning and teaching moment. So yes, changing my way of looking at this, I would say light. I mean, you're right. I mean, I guess in my head, I was thinking from the viscosity standpoint, right? Because I was imagining, or my perception was, there was going to be more coating of the tongue. So light from your standpoint does create more of that. I think it's more accurate. So I think from where I look at that, you've interjected something new to think about as I taste this.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, the alcohol, the higher alcohol perception, people think a lot of, you know, the impression is maybe it's going to make it heavier, bigger, fuller, but alcohol is less dense than water. So you're actually, a lot of times, the highest proof spirits will be fabulously delicate when you're tasting them.
All right. I've got this whole new perspective from what you just taught me. So thank you. Cool. But whoever decided to dial this in at 118, whether it was 120 or 116, I can't imagine a better experience than what this provides at 118. You know, to your point, there is that smokiness, and I gravitate towards mezcals and you know, the scotches, the peatiness. So for me, this is in my wheelhouse, but it's more of a lingering light. You know, just somebody just lit a fire in the distance, couple blocks away, and I can barely smell it, but I'm enjoying whatever they're burning a little bit out of the way. Just delicious. So in your bar program, I mean, is there something specific as a cocktail, is something you're making with this whiskey?
Absolutely. The general. So I guess the Keeper's Heart Irish and American, you know, we opened with that product. That was the Irish and Rye was our first whiskey. And the thing I love about that product, and it'll probably always be my favorite, is that the way I put it is there's very few whiskeys that I would make both a Manhattan and a sour out of, right? They usually have different characteristics that recommend them to both. So the Keeper's Heart Irish and American then is maybe one of the only whiskey is the only whiskey that I would do both with. You know, I think it respond. It's light enough, it's delicate and subtle enough that it does fantastic things in a sour without kind of having that heavy grassy note that maybe some of the more full bodied bourbons can have in a sour. But it still has plenty of assertiveness. It still has plenty to say. And so it works really well in any kind of stirred cocktail as well. That said, the fact that it is subtle means that a lot of our lighter cocktails or our more sort of delicate, restrained cocktails usually call for the Irish and American. And if we're doing the sort of the boozy, bitter brown and stirred type cocktails, we'll often reach for the bourbon first. And that's not a hard and fast rule, but that tends to be how I approach it.
This is something, again, to me, I would open this. This is a special occasion one for me, or this is one that I say, but have you had this? I mean, all mm-hmm. the expressions are, but have you had this? To me, this is one that I can say, I'm just going to blow your socks off with something you've never had before. Mm-hmm. And this is, you've never had this. What I'm still getting where those flavors just change are almost like this butter washed bourbon, like somebody, mm-hmm. little bit of bourbon, a little bit of buttery component there. But what I'm now picking up, and you introduced that to me, was the salinity of it. So I almost feel like, again, going back to that New Jersey Shore kind of thing, I got a little bit of salt water there. Oh. And we're going to get you on the beach. We're going to get you down the shore. That Pip, it. When you're in the area, we're taking you down the shore.
I'm from Minnesota. I can use all the beach I can get.
So this is, you know, from so much of the experience of this, this is kind of bringing me back to that, our introduction in New Orleans. What, for Keeper's Heart, you know, over the next number of years, what's the expansion projection, or what are the goals? Where are you looking for that consumer to just, for me, like me, get my socks knocked off?
Sure. You know, I think we're hoping to be in all 50 states by, I believe it's the end of 24, but it might be mid 25. So, you know, we're hoping to be able to be available to every American by the end of next year. And that's for the blend, and that's, you know, distribution generally, but that's the blend we're talking about here. We started laying down whiskey, our own distillate, for aging about this time a year ago. And so, or sorry, 2 years ago. And so in 2 years, you know, our 4 year will be ready. And I don't see us releasing anything before 4 years. If it's good at three, it's going to get better with one more year. So I think we're going to have the patience to do that. And these blends have just been fantastic. These will always be a part of our portfolio. They'll be a jewel in the crown. But, you know, working towards the release of our own whiskey and the styles of whiskey that Brian is envisioning, is currently making, that's, I think, the most exciting thing on certainly the immediate future, immediate being 2 years from now. So we are making currently the world's first triple copper pot still bourbon and rye. That has never been done before, and we are laying those down. And then we're also making a triple copper pot still, Irish pot still style whiskey. So it's barley whiskey. It's half malted, half unmalted, similar to Redbreast. But we are aging this like a bourbon. We're aging in charred new American oak. And so it's going to be a barley whiskey that drinks like a bourbon, probably. We're not entirely sure what it's going to taste like, but the early tastings of this as it progresses have been really, really encouraging. And this will be, you know, another world's first whiskey that just has never existed before. And so we're really, you know, we're really excited about the innovation and the sort of new ideas that Brian and his distilling team are bringing to the American whiskey space.
Minneapolis, if you're not familiar with Keeper's Heart and you haven't been, you are very fortunate to have this distillery in your backyard to call home. Because I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe it would be a good idea maybe to buy some property now in Minneapolis just so I can camp out for some of these releases, because they sound so special and so unique and so much fun. And unlike anything, as you pointed out, that's on the market today. And the fact that craft to what you're doing and to the imprint, the thumbprint, the Keeper's Heart is putting on the world, this is truly special. And people are working hard every day. So thank you for all the efforts for you and the team that you're putting into, you know, the mindset is, what can we do? You know, how far can we take this thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really is a story of, and I think this is really most innovation. It really is a story of what's old being new again. You know, copper pot still distillation is not a new thing, but it's really kind of unknown in the U.S. for whatever reason. And my prediction is that in about 2 years' time, you're going to suddenly hear a lot of distillers taking a strong interest in pot still and rediscovering that skill set. So I would say I think pot still distillation is going to become very much an American interest in the distilling world.
You know, when you talk about the United States and the pot still, mm-hmm. I believe that you and the O'Shaughnessys, as to what you're talking about, said we're going to stick with our single malts. We're going to stick with our Irish heritage, and we're not going to focus on those clears, although that will bring us revenue right off the bat. We're going to go with these whiskeys. Now, for many distillers that open, the alternative is what, a column still, maybe a hybrid, maybe some things that they can interchange as far as parts, because it's expensive. And, you know, you got to keep the lights on, you got to pay the staff, and you want to start making your mark in the spirits world. But there are distilleries that are going to, like yours, stay true and focus on, we're going to do the copper pot, and we're going to design, you know, let's say the neck, and what we know is from experience and what we're seeing the old world do, but we're going to put our spin on how we're going to either make our cuts, the grains we're going to source, maybe our yeast, maybe our barrels, maybe our blending. And that, to me, is what is so exciting with what you're doing with craft and what we get to experience.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Brian's interest in moving to the U.S. and launching this distillery, was, you know, the ability to do stuff like you're describing without worrying too much about Irish liquor laws, which can be a little prescriptive. So, you know, the opportunity to do, you know, innovation in the American whiskey space and just kind of throw all the rules out the window and try new stuff, it's just tremendously exciting.
Yeah, what you characterize right there, Pip, is somebody just took his handcuffs off and said, totally. You know, you're free, you know, you're paroled. Mm-hmm. You know, go leave the asylum.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if we didn't have one of, you know, somebody who I consider to be, you know, probably one of the world's best distillers, working here, or, you know, not working here, you know, envisioning what we're going to, you know, providing the vision for what we're doing, we probably would be doing, you know, a potato vodka. We'd probably be doing a potato gin, stuff like that. And we have those for use in the distillery, as you know, in our cocktail room. But when you get one of the world's leading whiskey guys, you suddenly develop a strong interest in whiskey.
This 10-year is, wow. It's honey. It's like these honey grainy specialness. Mm-hmm. I'm so overwhelmed by just enjoing this.
It's
talk about
discombobulatingly good.
If honey had a baby and the baby was grain and they just, I don't know. This is just so wonderful. Talk about this 10-year single malt and the experience to create this.
Absolutely. So this is not a blend. This is, as you observe, pure Irish single malt. And Brian observed that Irish single malt can tend to the dry side a little bit, maybe all single malts generally. So we finished this, you know, we sourced this again from our distilling partners in Ireland. And the contribution we made was to finish this in Spanish Malaga wine barrels for about 6 months. And the result is just so knockout good that I would put it up there with just about, well, with any sherry finished Speyside, you know, any sherry malt out there. I just think it's just a fantastic whiskey. There's, as a single malt lover formerly, there is a place in the pantheon for the perfect 10-year malt, whether it's like, you know, Talisker or Kalila. And I would say this is one of those perfect 10-year malts that just like, not another day, not another drop. Just it's perfect as it is.
Sometimes what happens is we get lost in a number. We get lost in an age statement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody would say, oh, 10 years. Why isn't it 17 years? You know, and they'd be missing out on such a wonderful creation to this whiskey. And sadly, We're almost empty.
We can probably do something about that for you. Well, the you know, the, I agree that there has been, at least until producers stopped putting age statements on the labels, there was definitely an arms race, like this sort of blood sport of like, how old is your whiskey? At least among the drinking clientele sometimes. But yeah, I do think, so this whiskey just won in San Francisco, the San Francisco Spirits Awards, Best Irish Whiskey of the Year back in July. And so, you know, even though this is a Minneapolis whiskey, this is apparently empirically one of the best Irish whiskeys out there. And I just think it goes to show that a 10-year can be that good.
I don't know why this didn't get double platinum, but somebody needs to be you know, brought out to the side and help them change their mind or something, because they were missing something. I don't know.
Well, we'll wait for the 20 years and see what happens.
See, again, you're introducing something, and it's like, all right, I'm calling a realtor. We're moving to Minneapolis. And not to mention, look, I mean, you talked about your cocktail program. You talked about your restaurant. And this is something wonderful that people get to certainly enjoy. Pip, you know, I'm grateful for your time today. Is there anything
that
we didn't talk about on the podcast? Anything you want people to know about you or Keeper's Heart that we didn't mention on the podcast?
No, I think we've covered everything. I think you've done an exemplary job as an interviewer.
Thank you. Yeah. Wow, exemplary. I'm going to have to look on like how to spell that.
Yes.
See, now you filled me with three pours of whiskey and I got to figure out how to spell exemplary.
Good luck for the rest of your workday, huh?
Thank you. Now, this has been a treat. This really has. I think there might have been a scoop that you wanted to share about Keeper's Heart or something coming along.
You know, I'm not sure. It's been something we're doing, but you know, if you haven't been to the distillery, I'd encourage you to come. You know, the brief when we opened was we had a room that sat 150 plus a patio, and we had to serve cocktails to them out of one bar. And it just so happened that I had a bar design and a bar workflow ready to answer that question. And so, you know, we are doing, I don't want to assume, but I think we must be doing some of the fastest drinks in the country. If you're talking about like made to order cocktails, not off a keg, you know, bespoke, with incredible flexibility, we're doing that, I think, faster than almost anyone else. I remember when I was bartending, we dropped a 20 tops first round of drinks, 20 drinks on a bar on the pass on a Saturday night during the busiest time of the rush. And we had it all done in 9 minutes. And I'm used to the hand chip Japanese ice and all that, and, you know, drinks taking 20 minutes or more. And so we're doing 90 second ticket times in this distillery, and we've got some fun ways. So check it out.
What I'm hearing you say is those people from Minneapolis have no patience. They want their wonderful cocktails right now, and they just don't want to wait too long to get them. Is that what you're saying?
That might be part of it, but I think that's a universal, right? Like there's when you haven't had your first drink of the night, you know, when you're waiting for that to come to your table, you get a bit ornery.
I think I'm the unicorn in this conversation, because what I understand is, and again, to your legacy and to your resume, I have no problem watching a bartender create a cocktail that just the craft of what you do, to me, I'll sit and watch all day. And it goes to say the level of where the bartender is today versus what we were expecting, you know, a number of years ago. People want to enjoy the show. But to your point, hey, if I'm out with, you know, 19 of my other friends, you know, we just want to start enjoying these cocktails right now. And when you're ordering 20, you're hoping somebody has a plan in place to get them to the table pretty quickly.
The show is still good. It's just a different type of show. We'll have to get you to the distillery sometime to
I'm telling talk you, about we keep it. We keep talking about it. You know, Minneapolis is getting cold right now. So perhaps we'll put that on our list for 2024 when it gets a little warmer, and we'll visit the Twin Cities and all those things up there that Minnesota has to offer.
I love it. We'll put a reservation in the books.
Perfect. Pip, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you to Keeper's Heart and the O'Shaughnessys for sharing what they're creating. The whole staff and team, thank you for how hard you work and the efforts you make. Thanks for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. And we can't wait to see you in 2024, whether it's in Minneapolis or at Tales of the Cocktail.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's always fun talking about what we're doing here.
Thank you, sir. Cheers.
My pleasure. Thank you. Cheers.